Folk Art Center, the Brown County Art Center, and the Golden Yang Art Gallery on the campus of Morehead State University. Learn more about upcoming events and shows at visitmorehead.com.
Morning and welcome back. If we were calling the Derby, we'd say we're coming around the far turn into the home stretch.
That's right.
Jeff and Tracy here on WMST, the AT&T Morning Line. What a great 2 days it's been.
Yes, yes.
And a little bit sad that it's coming
it's
to a
so
close.
It's so funny. My mom listens, you know, and she was like, I talked to her yesterday, and she goes, I'm already kind of sad because the first day is already over. I'm like, what are you sad about? But she says, it just sounds like you all have such a good time. I look like, well, we do.
We do.
And we get to meet really cool people, and just, you almost feel like you are part of the Derby. I mean, just say it. You do. You get
Without
the feeling you're a part of it, and it's fun to be able to do that.
We had a chance a few minutes ago to speak with Nick, who is with the baseball. Now I just lost my train of thought.
Slugger Museum.
Slugger Museum. That's one of my favorite places of all time. Probably my favorite place on Museum Row is the Ali Center. Yeah. Man, I love you guys.
He is a huge Muhammad Ali fan.
I love you guys. And Jeannie was a part of this broadcast for years. And now we've got Annie here. Mm-hmm. Annie Moore with the Muhammad Ali Center. Welcome to Mount Sterling.
Well, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
We are glad to have you here. Are you an L8 fan or you just recognize the bottle? Tell me.
I am, and I recognize the bottle. It's just one of those Kentucky things.
Uh-huh.
I love it.
It's part of who I am. The same way the red bicycle is part of who Muhammad Ali is.
Absolutely.
The green bottle is part of who I am.
And you said you feel like you're part of the Derby.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody in Kentucky gets a
feels
little bit
that way.
Of that. You can feel like you're
you
part
totally
of the Derby.
You totally feel it. It's a wonderful thing. So much to be proud of. And, you know, the Muhammad Ali Center, what a jewel in downtown.
Well, thank you so much. You know, when Muhammad and Lonnie were looking to plan the center, they had bids from L.A. and New York and Chicago and London.
Wow. Okay.
But they were decisive that it should be in Louisville and in Kentucky. This is the place that he called home, and they wanted to honor that.
Why would other cities even waste their time? You know it has
they
to
wanted
be
it.
Louisville.
Muhammad was universally beloved. I mean, he is beloved in places all over the world that
Worldwide.
He didn't even visit.
Yes. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
He is a global unifier. He was a United Nations messenger of peace. He really stood for respecting all people. You know, he had six core principles. One of those was respect. And he approached everyone of every walk of life, every religion, both sides of the aisle. He brought people together. And I think that's something we can still learn from today. And I think that's why he's still so revered today.
And obviously his story of coming up as a little black kid in Louisville and in a time where little black kids weren't treated so great. And he persevered and became the greatest. I mean,
of all time.
Little white kids in Appalachia can go, why can't I be the greatest?
Absolutely. He inspired something in all of us, I think, you know, overcoming so much adversity and standing for what you believe in, even if it means some sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking 3 years off in the height of his career. I can't imagine if, you know, LeBron James or Peyton Manning had taken 3 years off in their career to stand for something that they believe in. And regardless of how you feel about his views, mm-hmm. that is some serious conviction.
It is. It is.
Was Muhammad Ali active with the Derby? Was he a big Derby fan?
So we know he attended several. We actually have photos of him running on the track here at Churchill Downs.
Who else would be allowed to do that?
Genuinely no one.
Nobody. Yes.
Yeah, but he loved it. Actually, Muhammad and Martin Luther King Jr. Gathered around Derby time in 1967, I want to say. So this was always a touchstone along Muhammad's journey.
They're already getting ready to pull you away from us, Annie.
Well, tell us
a little bit
about
the museum and how we can be a part of it. Thunder coming up. It's a great spot to watch Thunder.
It absolutely is. If you head to AliCenter.org, AliCenter.org, you can learn about our programming. We just overhauled our website. We are the go-to biographical information site about Muhammad, so you can learn everything you'd ever want to know.
And inside the building is all the cool stuff.
Oh, man.
That just puts chills up your spine, even if you're not a boxing fan.
Hey, you can go see an Olympic gold medal, an Olympic torch. You can check out the art. There's so much more to Muhammad than what he did in the ring, and that's what I hope people can join us and learn.
Very
well,
good.
That's certainly what drew a lot of us to him in particular, as well as just his physical dominance. in the ring.
Yeah, he said boxing was just what got him to do the work he was supposed to do, which was spread a message of peace and respect and understanding.
We should all
very
follow
good.
Those footsteps.
Absolutely.
Andy Moore with the Muhammad Ali Center. Thank you very much for visiting with us. I wish we had more time, but again, it's one of my favorite places in Museum Row and all over all of Jefferson County. I love that down there.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
I really
enjoy your time during the Derby. You're here. You're right in the thick of it.
We will be here. Yeah.
Happy Derby to you.
Happy Derby.
Andy Moore, our guest with the Muhammad Ali Center here on AT&T Morning Line.
Feel
we
free
do
to
have
take a piece of Mount Townsend
Sorghum, and we've got Ruth Hunt.
Oh, thank
Candy
you so
that
much.
You are welcome to. The delicious. Townsend Sorghum is great on biscuits like the ones that we just had for breakfast earlier today. You can also mix them in with different beverages.
People use them
as a
in recipes and things
thing
like
that.
Yeah.
And bake with it. Yeah, it's really, really good stuff. And
we appreciate them
Ruth Hunt
for their donation.
And Danny Townsend, all the Sorghum folks for doing that. Muhammad Ali Center, you can get all their details online and come visit. When you're doing that, do the Hillary and Bradsby, do the the Science Center, do all that stuff.
I mean, what a wonderful two days.
Do not skip over.
You could spend 2 days just looking at the museums. I mean, besides
and
all
we
the
we did that with the kids.
There.
We'd come down for a long weekend,
oh,
and we'd
great.
Hit two or three or four places one day, finish up the rest of it on Saturday, and had a big time.
There you go. I bet a lot of families are doing that.
I would think so. The Falls of the Ohio and things like that.
Oh, I know. That was a cool
mm-hmm.
visit as well.
I love how Kentucky proud you all are of these products. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we Mount Sterling since 1921.
Yeah.
We've been making that.
Annie, thank you again very much for all that you do. We're expecting Pat Denbo with Lynn Family Stadium next, but now we may be getting another guest.
We might get
the mayor's coming. The lieutenant governor is coming.
You should see how coordinating this is. It's really
the old reference of herding cats is more true than this.
They're point matching.
So we're glad to have everybody listening to us on WMST and our broadcast. We will just see who comes up because I think they're going to try to squeeze somebody else in here other than Pat because Pat. Yeah. So is Pat on his way?
Okay. Very good. All right.
Well, and as we all know, we've got 14 radio stations.
Yes.
We talked about this, Tracy, that and everybody tries to squeeze in one more question.
Yeah.
So by the time you're 8 or 9 interviews through, you may be 8 or 9 questions behind schedule.
Absolutely. But the Lynn Family Stadium, what an impressive.
Man, that was awesome.
Yes, and that's who we're going to meet today. He would be probably the manager. Oh, well, I got
Vice president.
Vice
yes.
president, okay.
All right. And I don't want to take all of his
thunder.
Oh,
that's who we met yesterday.
Yeah. He gave us the tour of the facility. Anybody who is a soccer fan, which I am, my son played, and I was not a – I feel like that if soccer would have been available when I was a kid, I probably would have played
it. Like I said, you're built like a soccer player.
Because you don't have to be 6'6". You don't have to be 350. Not that you have to be 350
Actually, it's better
to play
if you're
football.
Not. It's really
but if you're just kind of average size, soccer is a game that
good
you
sport
can play.
For you.
It's good for your physical health, and there's a lot of mental stuff that goes in it because, like, the defensive side of soccer is like a zone defense on a football field where everybody's cut. And you may have, like, or in basketball, it may be like a box and chaser. If you've got one guy that you really need to try to shut down, you put one guy on him and the other guys play a zone defense. So there are some parallels to football and basketball and other. One of the things that people talk about soccer is there's not enough scoring to make it excitement, but it's nonstop action.
I know we were talking yesterday, and I never noticed
22 guys that are constantly moving
for 45 minutes.
Yeah,
no breaks.
No breaks.
Now, do they do substitutions or anything?
They do, but it happens during the game, and it's just stoppage time. So they'll take a minute, and you and I come out, and you go in.
Okay.
And they add 1 minute to the end of the game.
Oh.
Or if somebody gets hurt for two, either
Hello.
One, if somebody gets hurt and they have to stop the game for 2 or 3 minutes, then they add 2 or 3 minutes to the end of the game or end of the half. But other than, like, broken bones and things like that, soccer does not stop.
Yeah, I'm getting an education on the game a little more here because we have a soccer fan with us.
Yeah, I enjoy it and watch it quite a bit. And actually, Saturday, if I'm not mistaken, this past Saturday, watched the Louisville women on television on one of the ESPN channels, but I forget. Yeah. Pat, welcome to welcome to Mount Sterling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to have you guys into town.
So am I right that the women were on national television this past weekend?
Yeah, what's been great to see on the women's side is the league has done an awesome job leveraging its popularity with its new media rights deal. Mm-hmm. So it's a four-year, $240 million investment.
Oh, wow.
Really spread out across a few major networks like ESPN, CBS, Amazon Prime, ION. And so probably for the first time, it's easy to watch. And I think that's going to help grow the game on the women's side.
Absolutely.
And world-class athletes. This is the elite level of women's soccer.
Absolutely. It's the highest level of women's professional soccer in the country. There's just 14 teams. And the women in the United States have really outperformed on a world scale the men, and so these top tier mm-hmm. women athletes are calling home to this league, and so we have world class athletes at our team here in Louisville, and then every weekend we have players from all over the world really coming into town.
If you don't mind, scoot a little bit closer.
Sure.
The penguin is drawing in a bunch of noise. And,
the penguin draws a crowd.
Yeah, it's kind of like being at a soccer stadium when all the noise starts echoing up through there.
Which you like, though. You love that excitement,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I'm okay to be upstaged by a penguin. No problem.
I was sneezed on by a penguin several years ago, and that scarred me, too. Kind of like being told I'm close enough to the Derby trophy, but that's a story for a different day.
Well, we toured your facility yesterday,
awesome.
And I have to say, I was like, this is awesome. It's big, but it's not overwhelming. It has so much a variety of seating, just all the things. Give us the what for on that. Tell us about your beautiful facility.
Yeah, it is a sense of pride. It opened in 2020, which, as we all know, is probably the worst time to open a stadium
for big events,
a pandemic. But we've gotten through that, and we've been rocking and rolling since. It's probably the perfect size for what we're doing. It's got a little bit of something for everybody. We were very strategic and deliberate on how we designed the seating there based on tons of feedback from our corporate partners to our loyal, diehard supporters to the families. And so it's accessible. It's affordable. We have everything from suites and high-end, all-inclusive premium tickets to group ticket space for big outings. But also just the get-in price is very affordable and can be very social, an experience.
I heard something about the drumming.
Yeah. When the fans are doing the chants, do you all, like, print out what they're singing so that everybody can sing along?
Or you just have to listen to
it. We have done that before, but, it has organically grown. It's one of these things that the supporters, which is almost like an adult version of a student section you see at these games. But these are our diehard fans who are, painting up. They're banging drums. They're even allowed to light up smoke when we score goals.
Smoke.
Like, what do you mean light up smoke? That's funny.
We have smoke bombs going off in the stands that are pre-approved and they're safe. But it's something that is unique to soccer.
Some of the things they sing may not be appropriate for what this profession.
Sometimes the adults can do their own thing, but we do pride ourselves on making it a family-friendly environment.
Well, and it's more innuendo than specific words, but things like cartoons can mean different things to an 8-year-old. To a 59-year-old, but the same thing could be said with soccer fans.
But it's a passionate group, and we've benefited tremendously, and we don't take those guys for granted because they bring a certain level of atmosphere that we're really proud about.
You were a basketball player. Now you're involved in soccer. How was that transition?
There was a learning curve. I mean, there's things like, we call it the field. The pitch, the cleats are boots.
Yes. Oh, really?
Things like that. The jersey is a kit. So these are things that I had to learn a little bit to maybe speak the language. But a lot of things. As I've gotten a little bit older, I see the growth in soccer. I have young kids these days, and how accessible the game of soccer is. You really just need a ball and some makeshift goals, and you can play. And The other thing that I like is it's just a two-hour commitment. You know, as kind of baseball and football drag on these days, you know, it lends itself to kind of get in and get out, but still really enjoy it. And so I've enjoyed that. You know, I think the growth of soccer, the world has certainly already embraced soccer. It's the most popular sport, and so you see the passion and energy and how big it is across the world, that surely there's huge upside here in the United States.
Absolutely, yeah. Potential for growth.
Absolutely.
We're
sure.
Visiting with Pat Lynn Family Stadium. I got your card yesterday because one of my coworkers, we are trying to broaden his sports horizons into soccer. And he, like a lot of people, are basketball, football kind of guys. But there are some similarities. Defensively, if you watch, it's similar to zone defenses or box and chaser for basketball fans. If you've got, Ronaldo out there that needs to have somebody on him all the time, there are some parallels to other sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And soccer sometimes gets a knock for not that much scoring. But you do, once you start understanding the game and the nuance, you can start appreciate things other than just goals.
I
think in basketball, if there are some defensive adjustments at halftime, if you go from man to zone, or if you're pushing the ball in transition or slowing it down, those are things you can appreciate as a basketball fan, that as you start to learn the soccer game, there's a lot of that too. And I think with continuous play, no timeouts, no in-between innings, it's all happening on the fly too. And so it keeps your attention because the ball is always in play. And so it's one of these things that as you start to watch it, you better understand and appreciate really the skill level, the endurance of these players, the size and speed. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, they'll run 4, 5, 6 miles in a game.
Yeah, I mean, even more.
I was going to say, it seems like it would be even more. My short soccer career, it seemed like I was running a lot.
That may be what got you out of that. We're talking Louisville FC soccer and Racing Louisville. Tell us about the team names, how those came along, because everybody's got a tie-in with Derby, and the term racing has got some soccer background.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of a popular name in world soccer, Racing or Racing.
Oh.
But of course, it has its own meaning here in Louisville, which we're famous for a race ourselves. So we thought, it was a good kind of play on words. It had some soccer heritage, but also had some local meaning. And on the men's side, it's Louisville City FC, but we affectionately are known as Lou City. Both teams have purple in them, kind of a lavender and mint on the women's side, and mainly purple on the men's side. And one thing that's fun is, before these teams, not a lot of people were wearing purple in town. And we always joke that in this state, this city, we're huge on college athletics. It can mix the UK blue with the U of L red, and maybe we can all live harmoniously under
the
purple.
Well, there you go. That's a good idea. And purple. I mean, I love purple. That's a great color. It's bright,
And the sports fans in general really have taken to soccer, haven't they?
Absolutely. I mean, in a town like Louisville, where it is heavy college football and basketball, that we primarily play through the summer. It really starts March and goes all the way to October. But really, in the summer, along with the bats, it's the thing to do. And with racing now, racing's are the state's only top tier professional team. And when you have pro soccer at the highest level, it really allows ourselves to do well, especially in the summer months.
You're located right beside Bats Stadium,
close.
In and out.
So close.
Great visibility.
Yeah.
Are you going to be involved in anything derby-wise? Are folks coming in there to watch Thunder and participate in other derby events?
Yep. So we will host, I mentioned this yesterday, we'll host a women's game on Saturday. And, only in Louisville can we sandwich a soccer match in between the air show and the fireworks. The next weekend, the KDF Mini Marathon will end at our stadium.
Oh, that's neat.
And then we do take the derby week off from soccer, to take a quick breather. And allow the derby to do its thing, but I personally will be out here with some partners, some clients, and then just for fun as well.
Well, and then you have concerts there, sorry.
Yeah.
But I mean, you also have other, besides soccer, you also have other events there?
Yes, we've had a Janet Jackson concert.
Janet Jackson is there?
We had her. And then this year we'll do an 80s rock kind of theme, kind of an all day concert series, but it's something that we are looking to grow. Certainly want to do more. We play a ton of soccer, but that also means we've got a ton of other opportunity to do things inside the stadium.
It's a perfect size. I mean, it just really. How many seats? 13, I was trying to remember.
14.
Yeah, you'll probably get a different answer every time you ask me, but there's about 10,000 chair back seats, but then the in lines have the standing room position, so you can pack in another few thousand. You can get up to about 15,000, which would be absolutely, sardines
pretty
in there.
Tight.
But we've had over 14,000 a few times.
I'd say Janet Jackson might be one of those times.
Yeah, and when you can get for a concert, you can put people on the field. So you could actually.
I was going to say, how do you do that without hurting your field?
Well, that is something we're.
Because it's grass. Real grass.
We're very sensitive to, the grass probably is the top priority to make sure it's a perfect surface for our professional soccer players.
Oh, yeah.
But we've, the other stadiums across the country are able to do it, and so we've been able to do it too, where you lay down a plastic surface to protect it a bit. But when you can put people on the field, I mean, our capacity exceeds 20,000, really.
So would you put the stage on the open end up where the big long bar is at and then let them go back this way? And for a smaller show, use one side and put the stage?
Yep, we've done that. So Janet Jackson, we had the open end where the stage for the 80s rock concert. We're going to try the other end and, kind of build up kind of video, digital stuff around it, and then put people on the field. So, yeah, our stadium ops teams, it's like putting a puzzle together. Mm-hmm. They've been able to kind of navigate optimal spots.
Some of the time-lapse video of those transitioning rough arena or some of the other basketball and football fields to put the volleyball or whatever into the stadium. It's fascinating to watch those time-lapse videos.
It is, and it takes a ton of people and effort. But that's one thing. You got to have your stadiums kind of multi-use these days.
You really do.
To rationalize the expense side of it. Because if it's just sitting idle, it's not doing anybody any good. And so we're tasked with doing as much as we can inside.
Aesthetically, it's just beautiful, too.
Thank you.
The way the lights are and all that. And you were talking about how the light, it's a very interactive, like the lights go with the music, and I'd like to be there during an event just to kind of get the feel of it, but it sounds really fun.
Yeah, I mean, when we score goals, I mean, the lights are in sync with the music, and they're flashing off and on. The smoke is popping up, the drums are beating, the fans are going nuts. It's an exciting place to be.
Oh, cool. That sounds good.
So this started how many years ago?
This is its 10th season for the men's team, 4th for the women.
And I know that the Lynn family is very active community. Do they have a background in soccer? Kids played, parents coached?
A little bit. Dr. Mark Lynn and his wife and family have been tremendous supporters. They've helped us out in many, many different ways. I think they initially got into soccer with U of L. So they have their name on the collegiate stadium there. So I think that was the Lynn's foray into soccer and started to see how big this thing could be.
Gross,
and
yeah.
So as we kind of grew as a club and the stadium was being built, Dr. Lynn and his family said, hey, we want in, and we've appreciated their tremendous support.
And used in that area there.
Oh, absolutely. And it was a
tough spot for a while. No offense.
Yeah, no, I mean, really.
It was. And I think that's, part of our ownership group has done well with our elected officials. And, I think it really resonated that this was an underutilized piece of land. And we were able to work with a public-private partnership with the city of Louisville to turn in, kind of a brownfield and really a sore spot into something that is humming right now. And really, though, we're just beginning, as the mayor said yesterday, lots of development to come around the stadium. It's a 40-acre piece of land, and really the stadium only takes up about 11 or 12. So you will see other development around the stadium here in the near future.
Oh, that makes it so
will
nice.
Will it be soccer-related, sports-related, housing-related, all of the above?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, because we do want to turn it into an entertainment district.
Yes.
Mixed use that really connects Butchertown with New Lou into downtown and, make it more walkable and a good use of that space.
It was funny. I saw
the mayor in just a minute, so we'll be able to follow up.
But I saw three police officers on horseback when I was when we were leaving. I thought, what's going on? So obviously there's stables back there.
Yeah, that was the mounted police.
Yeah.
I can't speak to the, what they're up to, but it was good to see their presence.
Yeah, they were riding around. I'm like, look at this. And no one believed me. And everybody turned around. They're like, oh, my gosh, they're in. That was
Pat
pretty cool.
Pat Denbo with the Lynn Family Soccer Organization. Professional soccer here in Louisville. Website, social media, I'm sure you're on all of it. If folks are interested in catching a game, a lot of them on TV, they can contact you for tickets, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably just Google Lou City or Racing Louisville FC. We do pride ourselves on making tickets accessible and affordable. We'd love to continue to make our teams the region's team, mm-hmm. and get people from around the state come and see what we're all about.
And a family-friendly environment. Not that you can turn kids loose and let them just run, but you don't have to hover with the kids.
Yeah, there's a whole area
like
just
that.
For kids.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
that.
We have inflatables and face painting. We got a mini soccer field where kids can kind of
really nice.
Run loose.
Really addressed the fact you've got your developmental program for the youth trying to find the next fill in the blank.
Absolutely. Just a mile down the road, we have the Lynn Family Training and Vision Center, which is home to our pro athletes, but also is home to our recreational and youth academies. So we have over 2,000 kids playing under our brands these days, and anywhere from 4-year-olds playing rec soccer all the way up through 8 to 18-year-olds that are competitive kind of travel soccer.
That's awesome.
It is a fun sport.
And that's how you find the net.
And a fun program.
And it would be great to have them in your adult teams, you know, or your professional teams, the ladies professional and the men's. But so you get them young and there they are.
Work them right up through. I'm sure that Ian will be in touch with you for free tickets and the media passes and complimentary things like that. But I will pass along to him and we will make him become a soccer a fan, and if it's the last thing that we do.
I love it. One at a time. That's
absolutely
that's
right. Win the battle one at a time.
Yeah, I look forward to checking it out.
Thank you very much for visiting with us. Happy Derby to you.
Likewise.
Thank you very much. Pat
Thanks,
Denbo,
guys. Appreciate
Thank
the time.
The Lynn Family Soccer Complex, the Louisville FC, the Racing Louisville women's team. Again, and these are premium athletes. We talk about the Derby having premium athletes in the Derby. With these horses, these are world-class athletes. The women's team in particular, it is the highest level of women's professional soccer. And these women, a lot of them then go to Europe and play in the European League, which is the world-class soccer. So it is really cool to have them right here in Louisville and Jefferson County. Just a few minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock, we're on WMST from the AT&T Morning Line. Special thanks to Carlos and all the AT&T folks who pony up every year and put this together.
Yes, it's
and
been
everybody
a great,
who coordinates
great couple days
the event
sure.
that we have got going. Honored to have Mayor Greenberg with us, Craig Greenberg. You may recognize his face from the wrestling TV series. Whoever thought that may be what you are most famous for is watching people get body slammed. How awesome is that?
Well, the wrestlers was a wonderful experience. Being a part of Ohio Valley Wrestling is OVW and the wrestlers, great group of people, very proud to be a part of it. These days
Absolutely.
I'm spending a lot more time on the city of Louisville than I don't have much for OVW, but I'm proud to be associated with it. And I'm really glad that Netflix was able to help show the world what the folks
and
are all about.
Hopefully pick up another series, and hopefully you'll get in the ring and slam Shannon the Dude a time or two, and we'll see what happens.
You know, I haven't tried that yet, but I have tried climbing up on the top ropes. And, there's a lot more to it than people realize, and I have great respect for everyone who's in the squared circle. And now we've got the WWE Universal Champion as an OVW alum,
That's
Cody
exactly
Rhodes.
Right.
So it's a great proving ground for folks.
The 51st mayor of Louisville.
Well, it's my honor, and it's as much fun as you can have in these weeks leading up to the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, especially this time of year, right? But, I mean, you've been doing a lot of things. You spoke to us yesterday, so I got to hear some of it. But kind of convey to our folks in Mount Sterling area, like, what your initiatives are and what you, as the mayor, are wanting to kind of make a difference while you're in charge.
Sure, well, there are a few things. I mean, first, in a big city like Louisville, safety is, of course, the most important thing, is ensuring that everyone is safe. and making sure that people have access to quality, affordable housing. What I'm really doing, trying to do, is improve the quality of life for everybody today and for future generations.
Awesome.
So that means revitalizing our downtown, is making it so people want to live in downtown Louisville, want to come there to visit, come there for sporting events and entertainment and cultural events, for music festivals like Jack Harlow's Gazebo Festival that's going to be over Memorial Day weekend right there in downtown on the river, and to really invest in our parks and in our libraries, in new neighborhoods, and our people. So there is a lot that's just starting to happen in Louisville. It's a great city now, and I'm so excited about where we're headed. And it's only possible because we've got such wonderful people that are welcoming all year round, not
it
just at Derby Town.
It definitely seems like you have a very cooperative government. It is city-county, right?
Our city and the county is the same government for 20 years now. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary. There are not. Indianapolis and Nashville are two other examples, but it's not common.
Yeah.
So it certainly presents its set of challenges, but it also makes it so we can speak with one voice, we can act with one voice. We've got great partners with our Metro Council, so we're really on doing some wonderful, fun things.
Because really, Jefferson County, I mean, pretty big, right?
We're about 800,000 people in the county here.
Oh,
yeah. We're about 1/6 of the state population is living right here in Louisville.
Really, yeah. And so, and this is just because I'm curious, but with elected government, do you have a council or a city? I mean, how's that?
We do. There's a Metro Council. There are 26 people on the Metro Council.
So that's a large Metro Council.
It has to be a lot.
It's a large Metro Council. That's been in place for about 20 years.
Okay.
And so, you know, we've got good folks that are working on that each represent their neighborhoods, but also are thinking about the future of the entire city, which is critically important as well.
Very good. That's a good way. So they are kind of representing certain districts.
Each have their own neighborhood that they, you know, series of neighborhoods that they represent. And so certainly when there are issues related to their park in their neighborhood or unique set of traffic issues or sidewalks are really not getting any attention, they're the ones who can really help bring that to our attention and implement solutions.
Good,
but also,
you really have a representation.
Yeah. And then there are also, you know, then there are areas like downtown that certainly it has its own representative, but everyone knows are so important to the entire city, or issues like affordable housing that impact everyone, public safety impacts everyone. And then something that we're trying to do that's never been tried before in city government in Kentucky is we're looking to make pre-K free for all 3- and 4-year-olds.
You mentioned that yesterday.
How can you do that? How's that?
Well, it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of commitment.
I was going to say money.
It is. So what we're doing now is we're working with the private sector. We're working with nonprofits and foundations that are helping to pay early childhood educators more to improve the quality of the facilities we have around the city. And then in a couple of years, we're going to actually start paying for kids that are from families that are at 300% of the poverty level or less to help 4-year-olds go to school, and we'll continue to build on it year after year. So it's a big, ambitious goal, but I'm a firm believer that education truly changes people's lives and gives people wonderful opportunities that they never even knew existed. And the earlier we can start educating our youngest kids, the better off they're going to be. And so
you're not going to wait for the state to do it, huh?
Well, no, but I am working closely with Governor Beshear and his administration. We're working very closely with members of the General Assembly that are starting to look at this more and more for the kids, but also for the workforce. There are far too, I'm sure folks in Mount Sterling have the same issue, where there are far too many parents that are making the tough choice of, can I go back? Can I afford to go back to work, given how expensive childcare and preschool is? We want to eliminate that choice and help the kids and help the parents at the same time.
Well, and it helps economic development. I mean,
it
more people that are working.
It is key for economic development.
I mean, it is. So, and that's something, you know, I don't know that people really recognize that tie as much, but obviously you do. You're the mayor. But that is just a huge part of it, is getting people back in the workforce and so forth.
It's critical. So I'm into big and bold goals, and so that's why I ran for mayor, and that's what we're trying to do.
I love it. Good job.
We had a chance to visit just before you with Pat Denbo, where we held the mayor's lunch yesterday and talked soccer a little bit. There has to be a lot of out-of-the-box thinking to take that 40 acres.
Yep.
And obviously 10 or 12 is used now, and the other 20 or 30 is not yet. But to go, I see a future for that kind of eyesore, and let's turn it into something.
Well, every time I see large surface parking lots, I think, what can we do better than this?
Yes.
And so there are a lot of surface parking lots around that Great Lynn Family Stadium.
Why
and
is that? I'm just curious.
Well, just the way that it was built. It used to be just really industrial areas.
Okay.
And so they need parking for okay. to support the stadium. And there were not funds available to do it. And candidly, I'm not sure the city was ready for it yet. But now we are. It's right on the river. It's right next to our downtown mm-hmm. neighborhood. We can have a great, thriving neighborhood where people are living with restaurants and bars, not just on soccer game days, mm-hmm. but really all the time. If some of your listeners have been to some other big cities and gone to other major league ballparks, they've seen this type of neighborhood. That's the type of excitement we want to have here in Louisville in that neighborhood.
And that also attracts younger people.
Absolutely. That's the key to our future. I was here talking to some students just a minute ago, talking about why that's so important, that we need to keep our kids that are going to school at U of L, at Bellarmine, at Simmons College of Kentucky, at Spalding and our other institutions here, and we need to attract more young people from around the state and region.
Give them entertainment, places to live.
Right. We want people to build their families and careers right here in Louisville.
Very good.
We're visiting with Mayor Craig Greenberg, Mayor of Louisville. Derby week, obviously, and now 2 weeks later, followed by the PGA.
That's right.
How sweet is that?
Awesome.
It's got to be every day you wake up and, like, the hair on the back of your arm stands up and goes, man, this is just the greatest place, the greatest time. This is the pinnacle of pinnacles.
Well, I do, but I will also say that the world does not stop. So we're also dealing with lots of other issues. Yesterday was a full day.
Potholes and things to deal with.
Yesterday was public transportation. Are helping to partner with our school system. I'm trying to prepare our budget. I've got to present our budget to Metro Council at the end of April. So while I might be doing this,
you know, that's next week, right?
No, I know that's next week. So that's why I was up late last night, and I'll be up late tonight while I get up early. And then, of course, we've got Thunder Over Louisville this Saturday, which is the country's largest air show and fireworks show, a great free, family-friendly, fun event for people mm-hmm. to enjoy if they want to come to Louisville. The following Saturday, on top of all this, I'm trying to run the mini marathon in two Saturdays, so that's a half
as
marathon.
As a participant?
As a participant.
My sister-in-law, she ran it several years ago. Got out of running, and now she's back training again, going to be up here this year.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm excited. I ran 11 miles 2 days ago. That was my last big training run.
On purpose
run, so.
Or was like no, a
that,
dog?
No, that was on purpose. I'm hopefully I'm prepared.
Okay.
Very good. How many do you expect in that race, or is that a way to know that?
You know, I'd have to ask the Derby Festival, but I think it's over 10,000 people are going to be running.
Oh, man, that is great.
And for Thunder Over Louisville this coming Saturday, we're expecting several hundred thousand people.
Yeah, a few hundred.
The weather looks like it's getting better, so
know.
You know, whatever you want to come for here in Louisville, and if you don't like crowds, that's okay. Come any other time. Enjoy our bourbon.
Yeah.
Enjoy the great museums like here at the Kentucky Derby Museum, the Louisville Slugger Museum, the Muhammad Ali Center, the Speed Art Museum, our great parks. We've got restaurants. There's so much to do here in Louisville.
And, you know, it was packed. The golf house is busy. And it's not, I mean, there's only 14 stations. It's not us.
Yeah, our hotels do well year-round.
They do.
Because there's a lot to do here.
And you can just walk. I saw lots of people just walking around. It was a beautiful day, you know, yesterday. But everyone was walking around, and it really felt good downtown. It felt, you know, you're talking about safe.
Yeah, we've invested a lot in safety and in quality of experience
really
in downtown,
good.
And so I'm excited about
yes,
the future.
Absolutely. That's important. The downtown is the heart.
It is,
it
indeed.
Is. The heart of the...
Have you had a chance to pick a Derby horse yet?
Well, yes, I have. Oh. We've got a good friend of mine, a great Louisvillian, Brooke Smith, is one of the co-owners of Sierra Leone. So
Gene mentioned him.
Gene said he was going to win?
Honey,
yes. Gene said he was... Gene said he was the best horse
in the
field. That doesn't mean he's going to win.
Okay.
Yeah, you know how that is.
There are long shots of things.
I'm all in on Sierra Leone. I love the local connection, and that would just be so fitting for the 150th Derby.
Well, apparently, it's not just because it's local. It's also, you know.
Because of talent. Without a doubt.
Yeah, and also fierceness.
Fierceness,
and just the touch.
In the
Something
Oaks,
like that.
He mentioned just the touch.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
That was the Oaks. Okay.
So, yeah.
See,
well,
when he talks, I write it down.
Gene knows more about horse racing than anybody else I know.
Yes.
So,
no offense. We're not taking notes on what you say.
Please
take
don't.
Notes on what Gene says.
But I did take
especially
notes on
when it comes to money. Well, we appreciate your time. Hank is having you relocate to one of the other 14
All right. Well, thanks so much, and hello to everyone.
Feel free to grab some Townsend.
You probably had
some
a Blue
Ruth
Monday.
Hunt Blue Mondays, the best candy bar ever made.
Oh, I'll have to try that.
The best sorghum ever made. Just reach in there. And,
grab
all right, thank you all
want.
So much, and I hope to see many of your listeners here in Louisville.
Absolutely.
And we hope to have you sometime.
Happy
love
Derby
to, visit.
To you,
thank
and we
take
appreciate
care.
What you're doing. Mayor
thank
Craig
you.
Greenberg,
thank
Mayor
you.
Of Louisville, and again, you've got to have the
vision,
the broadest of focus to look at a 40-acre blacktop parking lot and go, you know what, we got to do something with it. And then you pull the right people together and make something good happen. And then once that little nugget, not to the little nugget, once the little nugget of the soccer field is there and people go, you know what, I'm going to put $1 billion into the
I'm going to build some really nice condos.
Then things are going to go around it, and the rising tide floats all boats. That's what he was talking about with the merged government and all the different council members. Everybody's got their own sidewalk and their own whatever that they need to take care of. But they also realize the rising tide floats all boats, and what's good for the north end is good for the south end, is good for downtown, it's good for the east and the west, and everything in
between. And when he talks about the pre-K, is that how you say that? It's the pre-K?
Yeah.
But, and that's why I said you're not going to wait for, because you know the state's been talking about that.
That would be an interesting test case, so to speak, and I didn't want to mention that, but it makes me wonder sometimes, does the legislature go, you know, if Louisville's going to do that,
let's
drag our feet a little bit and let them learn all the bad lessons.
That's kind of what I was thinking in my head, too. Yeah.
And I would not imply that is the case.
I know, but I thought about that.
But it makes you wonder. Yeah. You go, hey, let's let somebody innovate.
But he is so right that it frees up parents.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it frees them up to go back to work.
Oh, boy.
And we need workers. You know, we always talk about creating jobs. We need to fill the jobs
currently
the jobs that are
available.
Open. I mean, we really, really do. It's amazing. But the fact is, when you're thinking, I'm only going to be able to make a little more money by working than because of childcare, that makes a big difference.
Good morning.
So we're talking about childcare and pre-K.
And education.
I know. Yeah, I know. We had the mayor just sitting here with us talking about how Louisville is looking at, some initiatives about trying to make that happen sooner than later. But we were talking about how that frees up when you have parents that have to make a decision where is it going to make me, are we going to make any more money by me working or child care?
Mm-hmm.
And so it really does help with economic development besides just quality of life and the education for the child, too.
Oh, absolutely. When you talk about, this is something that Mayor Greenberg and I talk about a lot because, you know, what he's working on for Louisville, I want for the whole state.
Yes.
I want every 4-year-old to have access to universal pre-K.
Absolutely.
And just to give you like a personal anecdote, I have a 4-year-old. And she goes to a little daycare preschool, and the lady who runs it says, and this is one place in Frankfurt, she says she has the capacity for 39. She has a waiting list of 137.
Good grief.
So there's just not enough.
There's just not enough. And so, you know, you think if we can move the 4-year-olds into universal pre-K, you open up that many more slots that they can take, and you kind of start to, you know, chip away at that challenge for so many families.
Because it seems like that really is one of the major problems or hurdles of having young children now is, well, pre-K. Or having a place for them, daycare.
Yes.
You know, that
without
kind of
a doubt.
Yeah, daycare.
Lieutenant,
finding a good daycare.
Yeah.
And all
our guest
things.
Is Lieutenant Governor Jacqueline Coleman. Welcome to Mount
Sterling. Sorry, we'll introduce you.
No, we were saying who's next, and you came, so we didn't really officially introduce you. Welcome
good.
To Mount Sterling.
Yes.
We are glad to have you on the air with us a little bit. Tracy and I sometimes get a little cynical, stunningly enough. Could it possibly be that folks in Frankfurt are going, we're going to let Louisville take the bullet on this and let them learn the hard lessons of universal pre-K, and then the legislature goes, you know what?
It is working there,
now
so now let's
know.
Do it.
What's going on?
But how can you wait that long?
Am I that far offline thinking that's a possibility?
I don't know. I don't think the legislature wants to follow Louisville. I just think that Louisville probably has the capacity and the leadership that is ready to move on it right now.
Okay.
But we could learn some lessons from
We've
that.
We've got the money.
Yeah,
we do.
Uh-huh.
We do. Yeah.
Yeah.
In part because of what you and the governor have done and the success that we've had.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And when you know, we talk about like childcare today and families today, but the trajectory of the difference you can make in a child's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared this in my inaugural address. You know, we forecast prison populations by third grade literacy rates.
Can you believe that?
Holy smokes.
The number one predictor of third grade literacy rates is kindergarten readiness.
Okay.
And the number one support of kindergarten readiness is universal pre-K. So when we talk about that trajectory, I say we can invest in kids on the front end, or we are literally going to pay for it on the back end.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah.
And there's a direct.
I totally can understand that because you're putting them on the right path.
That's
early.
Exactly right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Early. So.
And obviously, no way to get every one of them, but if you can. If you can make that first step, whether it's a little kid in the south end of Louisville or a little kid in the mountains of East Kentucky,
that's right,
or in the far west coal fields, you fill in the blank. All the little kids of all whatever mm-hmm. Generation, all whatever background, it's all the same. Get them started right, and they got a great chance of success.
That's right.
And their family can maybe pull mm-hmm. themselves out of poverty because they can work.
Yes.
Without worrying about their child care.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, we got a cutoff on that one.
Hank has already seen. And I was just going to ask you, tell us what's going on in Frankfort other than that. Frank, Hank means
coming.
Business
yeah,
when he
does.
Gets
yeah.
you the,
yeah, I mean,
the cut.
Yeah, he's
so,
doing this even.
Thank you very much for all that you and the governor yeah. and everyone does.
I love
in
your
Frankfort.
Dress, too, by the way. I have to say that.
Thank
that is
you all.
Absolutely.
Happy
wonderful.
Derby to you and
you
the
too.
Best. To you as you continue in this next 3 years.
Yeah,
thank
right.
you. And thanks for talking about early childhood
yeah.
education.
Yeah, we were yeah, talking about it when you sat down.
As a grandfather, I can appreciate a grandson went through COVID and had struggles because
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
And he is just now getting
yes.
back
yeah.
to where he needs to be.
Well, good
so,
for him.
Yeah. yeah.
All right,
yeah.
thank you guys.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Jacqueline Coleman, our guest, for a very short amount of time.
Very short, very
but
short.
We appreciate her and what the governor does. And we appreciate, listen, all of our elected officials, whether they happen to be in the same political party as you, appreciate what they do.
Yes.
And without sounding too, because I am cynical and I shouldn't be, but let me put that aside. These folks that are in political office, despite you may not agree with their beliefs, but they're not dumb and they're not up
no.
there trying to cause trouble.
No.
They may have a different idea of, okay, how can we get
how can
from
we
point
get
A
there
to point B?
Or something like that.
And,
yeah.
and this person thinks steps A, B, and C, and this one thinks D, E, and F.
Right.
So if we can just, the governor signed 120, 130, 140
like
some bills out of 160, and they vetoed 20 and whatever. So if we can concentrate on the 140 that everybody likes and everybody gets along with, and just kind of put them off to the side and then focus on that 20, because
yeah.
those are issues that really need to be taken care of.
Yes.
But they, okay, what's the best way to do it? Step A or step B? Which one's the best angle to go?
So, her correlation between early childhood education and, well, basically prison.
A
rates,
direct
I
connection.
Mean, that is amazing.
Yes.
I can totally see that, too. But, I mean, it's just that's startling information, really. I mean, it is. Yeah, it's something. That does look make you look at it more on a long-term basis mm-hmm. than a short, like a short fix or something.
And we all know folks who have been born in horrible circumstances who have come through it and done great.
Oh, yeah.
And we know people who have born with a silver spoon in their mouth and have done horribly
oh, yeah.
well.
Absolutely.
So there is no perfect answer.
Yeah. No.
But if you know that you can get those little kids at 3 or 4 years old and get them started on the right path.
Right. Right.
Then, like I say, the little kids on the south end of Louisville and the little kids in Bell County and Knott County.
It kind of puts them on an even playing field,
yeah.
doesn't it?
Or at
I
least
mean, it really,
get them started.
Or get them started a little
uh-huh.
bit more on an even playing field.
Yep.
You know what I worry about, Jeff, sometimes? Of course, we didn't talk about that today, but sometimes some of these kids, and I can't believe it, but it's true, because we hear about the backpack programs and
mm-hmm.
things. Sometimes that's...
That's all they... Yes,
I'm just telling you. That's,
yep.
Sometimes that's how they're eating.
The summer feeding programs in schools.
But if they're not in school, sometimes they're not being taken care of. They're not... and definitely not monitored. I mean, you know, like you can tell... Like
yes.
If you see a child, you can tell if they've been cared for or not. And in some cases, this could also help with child abuse and things like that.
And as
I hate to bring
about,
up bad
no,
topics,
no, no,
but
let's well,
be honest.
But it's all part of the social fabric
of caring
that we're
about,
in.
I know.
When we drive through Louisville on our way to the Derby Museum for the AT&T Morning Line, we see... folks on
yeah,
the side
do.
Of the street that are homeless.
Yes.
You don't think about Mount Sterling, Owingsville, Moorhead,
oh.
Having homeless populations.
Oh.
Listen,
we
you're
do.
Just not looking
yeah,
in the right
not.
Spot.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
the fact that I know firsthand of kids who slept in the post office lobby so they could get up and go to school the next day.
I
know of that firsthand.
Yeah.
And and you think that, you know, that, and that,
is that yeah.
they do okay, but when they've got that much stacked
how
against
in the world?
Them,
and, I mean,
and homelessness also includes kids that couch surf. They
yeah.
don't have family
yeah.
situations, but they stay at your buddy's house
right.
for two or three weeks and move to another buddy's house for two or three weeks. Those kids have got the world stacked against
they
them.
They do.
And if there is a way,
we have
to
got
get
to get
going,
these parents, they need to get it together.
And it's easier said than done.
Well, yeah, especially me. I don't have children.
It is easier said than done. As a parent now,
know,
a grandparent
yeah.
who wants things to go well and sometimes
grandparents
it's just,
raising.
Yes, it is just
kids.
A little bit of help that can be given
yeah.
To have make a lot of difference.
Well, and drug abuse, you just have to yep. just name it what
it's
it
all,
is.
It's all part
it's
of the.
It's pretty much comes back. To
it
that.
Is all
it
part really of the process.
But also,
and if
just,
you don't think you've got a future, what are you going to do? You go, well, I'll just.
I mean, I guess
drugs.
That's a lack of
that's
hope.
That's all I've got left.
Yeah.
And if you can give these kids on the right path.
Yeah.
Coming up here in just a few minutes, we're going to visit with Rip Hatfield.
I think we are. I don't see.
We expect to. Well, we've got a vacancy here coming up in just a few minutes, so we may actually just hunt somebody down that's,
oh,
if we can look around.
How about
and
that?
See.
We went from not having more than 2 minutes with a guest to now
and,
just
and
talking.
And now we've got a stretch where we're doing that. We do want to say thanks to everybody who's been a part of this. The folks, we had a chance to visit with Carlos Sanchez Monday, who is the Kentucky the big kahuna
president.
Of AT&T.
Yeah, president of Kentucky.
He is a great guy on crutches because he was training for the bicycle race and tore like a meniscus or something, did some damage in his leg. So he, but all that AT&T does, when you bring millions of people into town for the Derby, everybody's wanting to take pictures.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
and
they want their cell phones to work.
All that stuff. There's a lot of pressure on those guys.
Yeah, there is. There. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely, including Hank. No, Hank's still walking around. He's walking around. But, you know, he works for AT&T, and that's why he's the one who's the boss mm-hmm. and does the hooks and tells us when we're
when it's time to go and time to stay.
And then hug us afterwards.
Uh-huh. All of the folks who have been a part of our guest list.
Oh, we've had great guests.
We have had great guest lists. The mayor and the
governor.
All the folks who have been a part of these days and all the events. And we're just down here for 36 hours, 48 hours, something. But
it seems longer, doesn't it?
It really does.
We pack a lot
they,
in.
They roll
in a
out
short
the red carpet for us.
I was like, breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast.
out to events.
A lot of food.
And you got 14 stations that are down here doing it. We're glad that we can do it. It's like our 30th year, more or less.
This is the 31st year of the event of the Derby
yes.
Morning Line. And I think we probably were right. Almost
second
right
or third
then, second,
year,
yeah.
yeah.
yeah
with,
third,
when
yeah.
Tom and Judy came down, and Dan and Dan and myself were down here for a while, and you and I are down here now.
Yep.
But it is a fun time. Lots of folks think Louisville is an eternity away and in a whole different world, and it is a different world. You got 800,000 people compared to 2,000 in Owingsville or 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 in some of the other communities. But it's just neighborhoods and everybody getting ready for their hometown events.
Absolutely. And I have seen a difference in the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Things do seem on an upward trend. The downtown looks more vibrant. Of course, we went through COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you expect? And then there was a lot of rioting there for a while and things like that. So it looks like people are coming really back together, and it just seems like things are going in the right direction here.
Yes,
yeah.
and lots of folks, once the ball gets rolling,
yes,
and that's the main thing, is get the momentum
going.
Get the momentum going in the right direction
and keep it that way. And I think about that with my own hometown, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think about, you know, how after COVID, how we all kind of were like so grateful to be able to see each other again and be together again, that we really have had such a good feeling because we're all so glad to kind of be able to get back together again. So,
well, if you think about some things in Mount Sterling, the downtown street project and the utilities, and and I know that
it's hard.
To say the least has been a burden and a headache, and you know it's been for the mayor and the judge and the fiscal court and the city council and the business community downtown. There's no parking. Every time somebody comes in my store, they track mud from the construction sites, and
But it has to get done.
Yes.
Over 100-year-old water and sewer, that has to get done.
The net gain versus the short-term pain.
And I don't care to tell you this, but with the mayor, I've told him. I mean, many times, like, I was like, can't we just, because we did that, the project on South Maysville. And we got through it, and it's gorgeous. Oh, my gosh. It is the prettiest street downtown. And that's what Main Street's going to look like. But after we did the South Maysville, I'm like, just a year. Can we just take a year, you know, just to enjoy our new street and get every, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, Tracy, everything. And I don't, he's probably listening right now. Uh-huh. Mayor, if you're listening, I'm quoting you.
We love you.
I'm quoting you. Uh-huh. But he said, nothing will be less expensive. Everything will, the price of everything is going to go up.
Yes.
You got to do it now. And he is just, he's on a mission, and he's going to get it done, and it's going to get done, and we all are going to be really happy.
And it's going to be great. And then once it's out of our hair, then we won't have to worry about it again.
We just got to keep, have to keep these small businesses, because we've worked so hard. I was looking at my timeline, you know, on Facebook when it pops up memories of things. And it was 9 years ago that we first started holding downtown merchant meetings.
I'll be doggone.
Now, there have been things like that done in the past.
Yes.
But we really, you know, I was working at the radio station. I looked out the front of the, you know, radio station, how beautiful our town is. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I was thinking to myself, it's so dead, though. There's no one here. I mean, we barely had any businesses downtown. I mean, that's just the truth. I mean, I'll just say we had attorneys' offices.
And that was pretty universal for small communities.
But still, it pained me. You know, I thought, well, you know, because I've been to Midway and I've been to some other, you know, cool little towns, small towns or whatever. And I thought, why can't we do that? We already have the infrastructure, the buildings. I mean, they all need maybe a little touch-up and stuff, but the buildings themselves are all beautiful.
All
they're
the bones
all here,
are good.
You know, the beautiful courthouse area, all that. And so that was 9 years ago that we really started making a concerted effort that we've got to get people downtown. We've got to get people to come downtown. We got to get these storefronts filled. We got to have events besides just court day to get people downtown. Mm-hmm. And it's starting to happen now. I mean, it's not like it happened all at once.
Got one this weekend.
What's that? Oh, yeah, we got an event this weekend. Uh-huh. Yeah, the Nancy Green Pancake Queen Spring Festival, and it's honoring Nancy Green, who is the original Aunt Jemima, born in Montgomery County. But, yeah, we have a lot of events now. The First Friday Market events in the summer is June, July, and August, the first Friday of June, July, August. And, you know, thanks to all of our sponsors, Traditional Bank on this one. But we just, you know, it does take a lot of work and a lot together. And what happens is the momentum goes. And then you have all these exciting things, and everybody's on board. But you got things like the street project, and it just wears you out.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it just, you know, people are like, oh, my gosh, I'm so tired of the dirt, and I don't want to drive over the streets. That's why when the going gets tough, that's when we need everyone. Come on, let's remember the mission.
Yep.
Remember the mission. Uh-huh. And you know, when you see small businesses come and go, we really do overall have great support in Mount Sterling, from the community, and actually outside the area. Of course, my job is to bring people from other places, not just our own people. You know, I'm trying to get people from Lexington or from West Virginia or whatever. And we do see more visitors than we have in the past because we got something for them to come to do, to see. We have a beautiful arts center, a really cool downtown. And when people come, they love it. I mean, you would not believe. See, we get used to things, Jeff. You know how it is. You get used to things. Like, I've already kind of become accustomed. Of course, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, but people that haven't been to our town, when they come, they're like, oh, my gosh, you know, look at this. And the very vibrant Main Street Park. And that does, it did kind of give a little boost in our arm, you know, of, you know, we really are making a statement by doing that. And so just all these things. But now we've had shops, and most of them are doing fairly, they're doing well. But we cannot, during this construction phase, and I'm probably preaching to the choir out there, sorry, everyone, but we really have to support these local businesses because we know we're going to get through it, and it's only going to be we're almost over. We're almost there. If we can just help them get through this last little bit, then we are going to have the kind of downtown that, well, like Louisville. You know, look at Louisville.
Without the traffic.
Yeah, without the traffic. Well, that's a whole other thing, right? But we've got plenty of downtown parking, and that's always an issue people talk about all the time is parking. We have a lot of parking, and it's right behind all these shops and things. You park further away at Walmart to get into Walmart than you do to park in our parking lots and walk into those stores. So if we can maybe help change the perception mm-hmm. of that a little bit, that'd be great. And plus, when you have a place that's fun to walk in and fun to walk around and check out, you don't want to, like, park right in front of the store. You want to park somewhere and then check it all out, you know. So we've got some things that, you know, the urban sprawl, you know, or the, you know, where everything went to the bypass and all that. Everywhere. You just feel it. You see it everywhere. It's all coming back. So there's our friend. Uh-huh. Yeah, you sit anywhere you want to. You sit right there. We're live. It's just me talking.
Hi, Rip.
Hello. I'm over here just chatting it up. But we knew you were on your way, so I got my little downtown push in.
The other station next. So
Very good. Well, good to have you.
Yeah,
yeah, we're on.
Right
on.
Okay.
If you want to, you don't all have right. to put on headphones, but if you
Rip
want
Hatfield,
to.
Rip Hatfield, the most handsome man yes. to ever wear a pink jacket.
Yes, absolutely.
Stories of Derby.
Or yeah.
Well, not yet, but you will.
And he's the 150th co-chair, right?
The co-chair of the
100?
The host committee for Churchill Downs.
Okay. Okay, I'm looking at. Oh, let's see. They put Derby 150 co-chair on there. So, yeah.
That is Derby 150.
Okay, very good.
Yes.
So, and also the 2006 Kentucky Derby Festival chairman.
Chairman, right.
Which is why you're wearing this solid pink jacket.
We're glad to have you. Of course, we've gotten to know you a little bit through Morning Line, and you're one of the hosts.
Right.
So over the years, you've chauffeured radio people in and out and up and down and round and round.
Anywhere they want to go, that's what we're here for.
And the same with the owners of the, because once the radio people are gone, the big money, we're the junior varsity.
Right.
The varsity moves in here before long.
Yeah, we have our horse owners come in. But this year they're coming in even earlier because we're having the position draw on the Saturday before Derby week.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
They've moved it up a little bit. The guys, they've moved it up to Monday. Now they moved it up to the Saturday before Derby.
Well, keep them here as long as we can, right?
How did you get started with Derby?
Gosh, with Derby or Derby Hope?
Well, either way.
Well, with the Derby Festival, I got started refereeing the Derby Classic. I used to volunteer for some of the others, but mainly I refereed the Derby Classic every year. I worked 25 out of 26 years.
I'll be joking.
Just because I loved it. Uh-huh. I loved the Derby Festival, and it was kind of a happenstance that I got on the board. I was actually in Las Vegas, and I'd gone through the Leadership Louisville program with the plant manager at the Kentucky Truck Plant, George Kermanis. And I think they asked him, because he's a hell of a higher up. And he said, didn't think he had time. He called me in Las Vegas. I was out there for a conference, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh. So you were just getting ready to go to bed.
And he asked me if I'd be interested in representing Ford Motor Company on the Derby Festival Board. I said, I've loved the Derby Festival since I've far back as I can remember, so it'd be an honor for me, and
yeah.
I've been doing it ever since.
I'll be doggone.
And it is a great experience.
It is. That was 1998 when I went on the board. So,
and the rest is history.
Well, the not history yet.
No, not yet. There's more history to be had.
Some of the stories.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. Just amazing backstories on the owners of these horses and their lifestyles and their different personalities, right?
Oh. Every year's a new story.
Yeah. Tell us a few, and realize we are on live radio. So if there's any rough. Like, you know, I mean, to protect the guilty kind of thing. Yeah. We don't want to, like, you know.
I've had so many opportunities and met so many wonderful, wonderful people. And it's just every year I get to meet some new people that are just outstanding, especially in the horse business. But not only in Churchill Downs and horse business, but just entertainment business for the people that come in. I've met movie stars.
Ooh.
I've met millionaires.
Ooh.
I've met horse owners that are just, and they're all just here to have a great time, and we're here to help them.
Yeah, yeah. Because people that own horses, it's really almost a hobby, right? I mean, really. I mean, I know people treat it like sometimes like a business, but really.
Well, I will say 99% of the people that are in the horse business are in it because they love the horses.
They love the horses. Yeah.
Now we have a few that, you know, have problems occasionally, and that's going to be in anything. But most of the people are just truly horse lovers, and they love the business.
And I had a horse owner 1 year. He'd just gotten into the horse business, and he really didn't know a whole lot about it. And his farm manager was with him, leading him around, showing him a little bit. And he was down by the backside. Just several other owners and trainers were around. And the farm manager kept telling him, said, "We got to go. We got to go." He said, "I don't want to go yet. I just like standing around here listening to them talk."
Absolutely. Learn. Yeah.
That's all he wanted to do.
Yeah, he wanted to learn. So, and that's mm-hmm. the thing. I mean, there's a lot to know, right?
Oh, there is. There's so much to know. And I didn't know a lot when I first came into the horse business at Churchill Downs. And they're all volunteer positions, but it's a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. What
yes.
to do.
And you got people coming from other countries.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Things like that, and culture differences, yeah. and just like I said, personalities.
They come in every color, shape, and form. Really do. And it's a fun thing to do, to get to know them mm-hmm. and appreciate what they do for the horse business.
Everybody yeah. always presumes it's the Saudi sheiks and the queen.
Oh, no.
But Gene mm-hmm. McLean was sitting here a minute ago. He was talking about claiming a $3,000 horse, breeding it to a $10,000 horse, and running it at Keeneland.
Got second.
And so it doesn't help to have money.
Sure.
I don't mean to imply yeah. that it doesn't. But you don't have to be.
Well, think about Mind That Bird,
uh-huh.
right? Was
yeah.
it Mind That
or
Bird? Yeah.
Who was the syndicate of like 50 guys that were all fraternity
right.
brothers that had a horse
funny
in the dirt?
Yes.
Funny Side.
Yeah.
That was,
so it can be just like buddies pony
sure.
up a little money.
That's what it is. That was the first year that I was on the Derby host board.
Really?
What
funny
a
side
year.
Went. And it was something they came in there on the school
And you got
bus.
To meet these
uh-huh.
guys?
I did meet them. Yeah, I did meet them. And they came, like I said, they came on a school bus and brought them on. And the rest is history.
Yeah.
But then I've seen people with more money than you can
with
believe.
With the gazillionaires,
yeah.
and they're here.
And we have one, I won't mention the name, but we have one very, very familiar name that just went bankrupt here a couple of years ago, that people, you make the wrong turns and just think that's racing luck.
There was a fascinating video I saw of Rick Pitino. Of course, mm-hmm. Coach Pitino is a big horse. So he was talking about he and some buddies of his bought a horse. And they did whatever and sold it and made $15 million, him and five guys. So they sold it for $15 million. Each one of them had $3 million. And the other guys, like, cashed theirs in. And he said, "You know, I'll take this $3 million and I'll play. It'll probably last me 10 years. He said, 3 years later, the $3 million was gone. He said, I hit one horse and did good with it.
Yeah.
And I thought I knew horses. And the rest of it was gone.
Well,
yeah. Gone.
One of the early owners I had was Robert LaPenta. And he had a horse called Cliff's Edge, who came into the Derby as the favorite. But that was the first big horse that he owned. But he and Rick Pitino and Joanne, his wife, and Rick and Joanne were neighbors when they were young, freshly married.
Oh, really?
And they were. And he, Rick, got him into Coach Pitino got him in the horse business, and they kind of went in together. He may have been part of the other group, but I don't know that for sure. But he went to Rick one day and said, "Would you mind if I bought a horse of my own?" He said, "No." Well, that's the horse he bought. He ends up running in the Derby, and when they that year. Churchill Downs gave every owner an oil painting of their horse.
Oh, that's neat. Isn't that neat?
And I wanted to present it to Mr. LaPenta, and he said, "No, Rick Pitino's having a party for me tonight." That was Thursday or Friday, I forget which one, before Derby. Bring it out there and present it to me in front of Rick. So he had us all out.
Funny.
I bet that was fun.
Oh, it was great. It was great. Coach Pitino is a great guy.
Uh-huh.
He really is. And another horse lover.
Yes,
horse
he
lover.
Is.
But I've never met, I won't say I've never met anybody, but I've met very few that are bigger horse lovers than Mr. LaPenta. He's in it just because he loves the horse.
Because he loves the animals.
Yep.
Yeah.
So have you picked a horse this year, Rip? They're getting ready to pull you away from us.
There's so many of them.
Uh-huh.
I haven't had time to go
uh-huh.
through them. And we won't know who's going to be set for yet. I just heard paper this morning, one horse got pulled out.
Oh.
Got injured somehow.
Oh, no.
A day at a time or something like that. I can't remember exactly. I think it's called day at a time. So you just never know to the last minute.
Have you got a pattern that you, like, pick off of or jockey colors? Or
I like the names.
Just like the rest of us.
I look for the jockeys and the owners more than the horses because I don't have time to follow them the races. But I have a lot of favorite trainers and a lot of favorite owners for the fun of betting.
Do you put $2 down on who you're hosting just...
Oh, no, I put more than that on the one I host. I always have a good ticket on whoever I'm hosting. Just if they do win, then I'm going to be part of the fun.
Oh, that's awesome. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
That is a neat deal. Well, what a great time for the city of Louisville and all of the Louisville residents
and the
everybody
festival.
Involved with the festival and all the
committee,
different things.
Yeah.
It's a great time here. Y'all, glad to have you all here. Hope you all had a good time.
Oh, we've had a wonderful time.
Spread the word. That's what this is all about.
That's right.
We sure will. It's always good visiting with you, and happy Derby to you.
Happy Derby to you all. Thank you for being here, and
thank you for having us.
Rip Hatfield, really our guest, former Derby chair, and is actively involved in the Derby Festival in so many different ways, and all around good guy and storyteller and chauffeur and everything.
There are stories that you gave a little preference on
yes,
that.
We have to be careful. Thank you, Rip.
But I was thinking to myself, I've heard some doozies.
Well, and the horse business has got lots of colorful characters who in turn have colorful stories who in turn generally don't clear the seven words you're not allowed to say.
I've heard
on
some
radio.
Interesting things.
Yes.
Yeah. Rick, he actually, he was our guide for a few years.
Yep.
And Roy Potts and his wife have been.
Roy and Kathy,
we miss
them. Roy's got COVID. Hope you're feeling better, Roy.
Aw, yeah, he does.
He's getting better.
Well,
but
he just got back from France.
He doesn't want to, like, expose us to any unnecessary diseases.
Hello, anywhere you want to sit.
Either one?
Yeah, so we are going to talk with Ed DeRosa.
Horse Racing Nation.
There you go.
Good morning, how are you?
Doing well, how are you?
Doing great, thank you.
Good.
We talked with Gene McLean a little while ago, and he had a few things. He's like, now be careful, because what I say might not be matching what Ed says.
Oh.
Usually doesn't.
Is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
We have some different ideas on handicapping.
There you go. Okay, very good.
For folks, our listeners in Mount Sterling, we're in Mount Sterling, Jeff and Tracy. Tell us a little bit about who you are and your background in the horse racing business, because everybody takes a different path to get where they're going, especially in the horse business.
Yeah, I grew up in Cleveland, and there's a track there, Thistledown. And back in the 80s, when I grew up, there was no web. No apps or anything for you to bet on races. So if you wanted to bet horses, you had to actually go to the track. And my grandfather was a bookie. And for those people who wanted to bet Saratoga or Churchill Downs and they lived in Cleveland Gulfstream, my grandfather was one of the people they went and saw and could get a bet down on races across the country. And I was just so fascinated by that. And his legitimate business was an arcade. So I would play pinball in the morning, and he would, you know, be on the phone and stuff, and then we'd go to the track, and it was just, it sounds funny now looking back, like, oh, who would let their kid do that? But,
I think it's great. I was thinking that sounds good.
It was just a blast, and I got to learn about horses, and he, knew a lot of people and just fell in love with the game and knew I wanted to do it for the rest of my life.
I'm glad that you clarified that he had the legitimate business.
Yes.
Because the term book, everybody thinks of the old 1960s movies and the guy in the rumpled suit.
There's probably something else.
And maybe it, but it was a legitimate way of, legitimate, not the right word. It was a way of life.
No,
for folks
that was his job. Yeah, that was what he did. And, the arcade, allowed him to have a storefront and push some money through, legitimately. But, he would take bets. And actually, it was the one thing I learned more than horses itself with him being a bookie is he hated the Browns. And I never really understood that because, you're in Cleveland, you grew up there. Well, how could you hate the football team everyone loves? But it was because everyone bet the Browns. So when they covered, he, not necessarily out of his pocket, but it was bad for business when the Browns did well.
Yeah. So, well, gratefully, the Browns don't do very
well
very often.
Oh, my goodness.
So You don't have
That's how
worry.
I was able to afford those pinball machines.
You don't have to worry a whole lot about that.
That is cool.
So fast forward to today or your time here in Louisville. You, as a kid, you were exposed to the horse business. You know, this is my cup of tea. I'm doing this.
Yeah, I never been to Kentucky until after I graduated college, but got a job in Lexington for a horse racing publication similar to where I am now.
Yeah, yeah.
Thoroughbred Times.
I remember Thoroughbred Times.
Yeah, moved to Lexington and haven't looked back. Made horse racing my career. Am in Louisville now. Even brought the kids up. In the Path of Totality was a racetrack in Indiana. Horseshoe Indianapolis. They were in the Path, and their opening day for 2024 was last week. So,
oh, wow.
Brought the kids up to the track, saw the eclipse, saw some races, and it was a special day to share both racing and see the eclipse with my family. It was definitely something I wanted.
And you were 10 years, you were director of marketing for Churchill Downs.
Yeah, there's
that's a big deal.
It was a real privilege to Derby itself is great and transcendent, but every day to represent Churchill and advocate racing and get people excited about betting on races, whether it was December or Derby Day, was something I really enjoyed. And
absolutely.
Get to do similar. I'm back to my journalism roots with Horse Racing Nation, but we're doing it every day there too. And the one thing I would say for Derby is, you know, it's the one day everyone, even if it's just 5 minutes for the race, they're tuning in on NBC. Mm-hmm. They're going to the track. They're making bets with friends, picking names out of a hat. And what we try to do at our website is have information for everybody. So if you're a complete novice and just want to know what colors the jockey's going to wear on your favorite horse, we have that. But if you want to learn a little bit more and sound smart at parties, we got information for that too.
Very good. And maybe
a winner, hopefully.
And maybe an educated bet.
That's the fun part. Had a few winners at Keeneland this meet, so I'm hoping I'm getting hot at the right time.
Oh, good. All right. Very good.
Ed DeRosa. Am I saying DeRosa right?
Yes, you are.
Okay, DeRosa with HorseRacingNation.com, our guest here on the AT&T Morning Line. All things Derby for the next few weeks, but 24/7, 365, it's all things horses.
That's
on the
right.
Site.
Yeah, and, you know, with the things going on with, you know, Baffert and Churchill Downs, we've been covering that. Our editor was at the court hearing yesterday.
A little bit.
Yeah, do you mind to tell us a little more
mind.
About that?
That's the good thing about not working at Churchill anymore. Yeah.
I can actually talk about Churchill things.
So Bob Baffert had a horse named Medina Spirit who won the Kentucky Derby in 2021, was found to have too much of a legal drug, but only to a certain amount in its system. So I do want to be clear that the drug is legal to have.
Okay.
It's just supposed to be out of your system by race
and
day.
What is the purpose of that? Like it's like recovery for exercise?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
A painkiller, maybe too strong of a term, but that's the gist. Basically, you know, like putting Bengay on after you
take
pitch.
You take a Motrin after you work and keep you from being stiff.
Okay. So, you know, I don't want to oversell it like, oh, man, he was on something to make him, you know, run a hole through the wind. It wasn't quite that. But safety is important, and you want horses when they run to be healthy. So the fact that he had this drug in its system on race day does give pause, like, okay, were you masking some injury? Were you trying to get him to work through? And those are issues that, you know, people are in tune with. So it doesn't necessarily mean it was this nefarious, oh, Baffert tried to cheat the Derby. But the rules are in place for a reason.
Yes.
He broke them, and it wasn't the first time. So Churchill Downs did, you know, make the decision.
Well, because there'd been a lot of injuries. I mean, horses that had to be put down because of – so it was – maybe even higher in the minds of people or a little more forefront.
Yeah. So he got a 2-year ban from Churchill, and then the powers that be felt like he wasn't repentant enough during those 2 years, so he got a third.
He doesn't strike me as a repentant type of personality.
No.
Am I wrong?
You know, I do think...
And I don't mean to cast dispersions. That's not my
point. No, it's just, you know.
No, yeah, I mean...
He's like we talked about, confidence.
I think you reach a certain peak of mountaintops, and his peak is much higher than even some of the best that have ever done it. And, you know, with that is going to come confidence, to put it kindly, arrogance, to put it maybe more negatively.
Yeah.
But the other thing is these trainers at this level... they're surrounded by people who are the best in their business. So the owner of Medina Spirit, I forget exactly what his corporation is or whatever, but he is an extremely wealthy Middle Eastern businessman who is probably not used to being told no.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're dealing with those dynamics, things do tend to
boil
over.
So was it, you think, just a mistake?
No.
Okay. Well, I guess that's what I'm,
No. And again, I don't think it was, we need to cheat to get this horse to run faster. They were pushing the envelope.
Yes.
I mean, these trainers know that.
Kind of like NASCAR.
Absolutely.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying,
right.
is what they
Robbins
always say.
Robbins racing.
Uh-huh.
Robbins racing.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, you know, and I don't. Again, I don't want to undersell it, but I mean, they know what they're doing.
Yesterday, you said?
Yeah, they didn't make a decision, which actually is a little surprising. I mean, I think a lot of observers thought that this would be, hey, you knew going in that Baffer couldn't run in the Derby, or that was a chance you took as an owner to give him horses, but. I mean, the fact they're thinking about it, I have to think, gives Churchill some pause about what their next step is going to be. But, I mean, as a betting man, I would say it's probably 20 to 1 that the owner wins his case. So
really?
Ultimately,
so what would that mean?
That would just mean more lawsuits. Now, the owner, what he's suing for is to allow his horse, who won the Arkansas Derby,
to run
here in the Kentucky Derby with Bob Baffert as his trainer. But should he win that, then you get into issues of other trainers can sort of say the same thing as, well, wait a minute, we did this for 6 months thinking Baffert's not allowed.
Yes.
You plan your whole program around that, and believe me, Baffert is so good, as some other trainers are, but you don't want to run against
you
his horses.
You have to factor him in to the way you think, the way you train.
It's amazing that somebody would be so good that really does make that big a difference.
So, I mean, it would be a mess if this lawsuit ends up being allowed to continue, because then that's just going to introduce more lawsuits, and with 18 days to go, crunch time.
None of us are attorneys hitting this, but what is their argument to say, we know you guys banned him, but we don't think.
So his argument is that when he bought these horses, the ban was only 2 years.
Okay.
So when you buy horses, they're typically one or 2 years old.
Right.
So he
yes.
would have done this last year or the year before. And at that time, the ban was set to expire.
Right.
And then the horse would be
allowed to.
He would be allowed to train because his penalty would
correct.
Be over.
Would have been.
So then they extended the penalty after the period of when these horses were purchased with the intent to send to Baffert. Very typically, when you buy, especially at the higher level, you're buying yearlings and two-year-olds, you know, okay, I want one for Baffert's program. I want one for Todd Fletcher. I want one for Brad Cox. And this owner pretty much has all his horses with Baffert. And I don't disagree. Like, I have no doubt he bought horses thinking, okay, in 2024, Baffert's going to be eligible.
He's back, and I'm good.
And I'm going to win the Derby.
I want to win the Derby for real. They took it away with me with Medina Spirit. I want to come back and win.
Wow.
And to quote Lee Corso, not so fast, my friends.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Ed DeRosa,
So what is Bob Baffert doing? I mean, he's training right now?
Oh, yeah, no. He's,
for
he's
everywhere
very
other than here.
Everywhere other than Churchill Downs' own track. So he can't run at Turfway. He can't run at Fairgrounds. But I would very much expect to see his horses in the Preakness Stakes.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And you're presuming that the court is going to go, hey, nah, baby, nah.
I can't see this coming through.
How can you not?
I mean, there's some very, and again, we're not attorneys, but I mean, the property rights case law of racetracks being able to ban who they want is pretty solid.
It's legendary, isn't it? It's a private business. If you're allowed, you're allowed, and if you're not, you're not.
Right. I mean, obviously there's considerations of, you know, are you doing this because of race or things like that. That's certainly not in play here.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a clear reason why they did it. It's very linear.
The whole extra year, I don't think I'm understanding, like, what, could it just go on forever?
Yeah, it could.
Really? So they just don't change their mind, or? Like you said, they didn't seem to repent enough.
I think they wanted Bob to kiss the ring, and,
and
he said he might kiss something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no love lost between Bob and the C-suite.
And I mean, this is where the Kentucky Derby is held. So they're really.
Yeah.
And
I see it both ways. I mean, I thought the 2 years was prudent and, you know, even called for, perhaps, given what had taken place.
There was a history, yeah.
You know, gun to my head, I would say that the extra year was
enough. Enough, yeah.
But at the same time, like, and I have friends who still work here, and, you know, I know their viewpoint. It is the Kentucky Derby, and you mess with that, you're going to face consequences.
Because of the reputation, you know, reputation.
Well, and it's, I mean, the,
All eyes are on.
Churchill's a publicly traded $9 billion company. When I started there in 2011, it was worth $900 million. So they've grown 10x in the 13, 14 years. And the Derby is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, God forbid something were to happen with the integrity of the Derby and it lost its luster, it would kill this company. So,
yes. And, you know, we all worried about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did, didn't you, when you
saw
that?
Even as a casual fan, which I am.
When there were several injuries, and then when that happened, I thought, oh, no, you know.
And absent the Baffert considerations, I can say, and I think a lot about this because it is my life, and I have not to get too personal, but I have a son who has some pretty severe medical challenges, and I often think about vocation, and I'm around all these great doctors and nurses, and I'm like, man, look at what they're doing with their life, and I try to get people to gamble on horses. So I do think a lot about what I do, and is it right, and I feel really good about this industry, and most of the people in it love these horses.
Yeah, they love the horses.
You know, they're born for this. Mm-hmm. The horses, for the most part, love to do what they do. And when they don't, you know it.
Like, yes.
There aren't horses out there running. And yeah, they're trained to do
against
it, but
their wheel or
they're out there, and yeah, we do get enjoyment from it, but there's no greater feeling than being right about a horse race, and I know the people who work with the horses feel the same. So,
and all the ones on the backside and all that.
I've done a lot of thinking about it, and I know how serious it is to ask an animal to do something for your pleasure, and ultimately, I am comfortable with the way people treat them, and I'm privileged to be a part of it. I'm proud to be a part of.
Well, when you look at some of the things they talk about, the horse, for them to give their all like that, they have to want to.
Right. No, it's
really deep down they have to want to.
And it's a special bond. I mean, you see it with whether it's the jockey in that moment or the groom that takes care of the horses. It is awesome to see and be a part of. And I like gambling too, so, you know, for me it checks that box as well.
And
there's no better race than the Derby to try to make a buck on, because the payouts are astronomical.
It is going to be a fascinating battle of two 900-pound gorillas. Because the old joke about where's a 900-pound gorilla sleep anywhere they want to. You've got two 900-pound gorillas with Baffert and with Churchill.
Oh, yeah. Man.
The storylines are great.
Let's look forward a little bit. And obviously, Baffert is part of the looking forward. What about the 150th? It is going to be a whopper of a year.
Yeah, no, they got some good horse flush lined up. Fierceness is going to be the favorite. He won the Florida Derby. Uh-huh. He looked awesome doing it. Anyone who wants to know what a superstar racehorse looks like when they run, just put Florida Derby in your YouTube search bar. It's an electrifying performance. Now, the thing with him is, he has two electrifying performances. He won the Breeders' Cup as well. In between those, he has two clunkers.
A clunker.
So,
bless his heart.
If the fierceness from the Florida Derby shows up, I truly think he's unbeatable. But we've seen other fiercenesses show up that would definitely be beatable. So as a bettor, you just have to balance and say, what's the right price to take a shot that the Florida Derby fierceness shows up? But for the sake of the race and the excitement, I hope we get a show from him, because to me, Barbaro is the greatest performance I've seen, and the crowd responds to it.
Mm-hmm.
They know they're watching greatness, and when you get to see that on this stage, there's nothing better. All that said, there is a long shot I like a little bit. Honor Marie should be 30-1. So my betting is going to involve hopefully Honor Marie getting in there with fierceness.
Okay. And we hear about Sierra Leone.
Yeah, that's the other favorite, and a lot of people are saying two-horse race, fierceness and Sierra Leone.
Okay.
I think if fierceness shows up that we saw in the Florida Derby, it's a one-horse
race. It's a one-man show.
And the issue with Sierra Leone then is, even if the real fierceness doesn't show up, Sierra Leone is the co-favorite, basically. I'd rather, at that point, if fierceness isn't going to run well, I'd rather take a shot with the long shot than play the other favorite.
Okay, so, there you go. I get it.
From what I heard at another station, Gene McLean is on Sierra Leone. Mm-hmm. So I think he and I are probably going to have a lunch bet or something, because I don't love him.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
So where, obviously everybody wants to pick a winner and hold the ticket up that says I won. Where's the money at in the race? Everybody wants to win. Everybody wants the
$2 bet, around. Win $20.
But if somebody's looking for the money, what's the money bet?
I mean, for me, it's using Honor Marie and then getting him in there. You can do an exacta box, which is the top two finishers. Mm-hmm. The trifecta would be the top three. I would say exacta, you're talking hundreds of dollars. Trifecta, thousands, maybe even 10 or 20,000, depending on who. So Honor Marie is a horse that I'm definitely want to get in the top three.
Okay.
And then I think with Fierceness being, I'm going to play that the real one shows up.
Okay.
So for me, it's, you know, Fierceness, Honor Marie, and then another long shot I like is named Epic Ride, and he'll probably be 40 or 50 to 1.
Really?
So if it's those three in a trifecta, it could easily pay $5,000 or $6,000. Mm-hmm. Now, the easy part is collecting the money. The hard part is actually getting those three horses to finish in the top three.
Uh-huh.
But,
very good.
I mean, if you're looking to make a score, you want to be in the trifecta pool.
Anything Oaks related that we can look forward to?
I think the Oaks is going to be a more formful. Talifa, I think, is a worthy favorite. She's trained by Brad Cox. She just looks the best of these. Now, a horse that Chad Brown trained, same trainer as Sierra Leone, whose name I'm blanking on.
It's not Just the Touch.
That's a colt. This is one of the fillies.
Yeah,
that's okay. But Chad Brown trains a horse that if she were to get into the Oaks, right now she's on the outside because of points.
Yes.
But if she were to get in, if you see Chad Brown's name listed as the trainer, it's her. She would, I think, Ways and Means. That's her name.
Ways and Means.
Okay. Like the committee.
Uh-huh.
So Talifa right now, but if you see Ways and Means' name in the PP, she's a real threat.
A lot of these names, the origin of some of these names is pretty incredible. And they change them. You know, I mean, a horse that they buy and whatever, and then change to suit them later on during their life.
Did they change their name?
It's kind of
typically the owner who buys the horse to race gets to name the
gets
horse.
Yes.
The
horse. Yeah. Okay.
So they might start out with a name or a number, and then they get named after somebody's grandmother or something.
Okay.
So
well, and Ways and Means is owned by Seth Klarman, who is a private equity maestro.
Well,
I forget the name of his firm, but he's very successful. But his derby horse is named Domestic Product. So he very typically names horses after financial terms.
A friend of mine wanted to be in the derby business and have his horse named That Brown Horse Over There.
And that's too long, right? You're not allowed to have that.
It's 17 characters.
Yeah. Oh, okay, 17 characters.
But it never did pay him out.
Never, no.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the, like, a lot of people, even very wealthy, that know that they're going to have some good horses among the ones they buy. But you name a horse, and once they start, that's its name.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's your last shot once they're in the program.
Okay.
So, you know, owners do talk about, like, you know, they want their trainers to say these are the ones I think could really work out, and they give them the names that, you know,
can
for
come
a derby
up with
horse.
Something memorable.
But, I mean,
because that's part of the story is the name of the horse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that ties into so-and-so, or it ties into their business a certain way.
Yeah, and shame on me. I don't know the origin yet, but we're going to find out. But I'm sure Anna Marie has some backstory of someone named Marie in the owner's life. So we'll find out about that. But, Sierra Leone's named after the country. I don't know the origin there. But, yeah, it's always something interesting.
We appreciate your time here today.
Well, thank you. What a great way to end our broadcast.
We're a couple of minutes from news. So
it has been a game.
By all means, take with you some Townsend Sorghum and some Ruth Hunt Blue Mondays.
Yes.
And wish you a very happy derby.
Kids will love this.
Yeah, that sorghum is great on biscuits. You can use it for sweeteners.
You can make a mixed drink with it.
Various beverages and things like that if you don't want to. Other stuff.
Right.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank
nice
you
to
very
see
much.
You.
Ed
Happy
Durant.
Derby.
Thank you very
what
much.
What a great way to. We got all the insight on that one,
well,
didn't
and,
we?
And Garth, I didn't see him here.
It's almost 10, so I don't think so.
It's 2 minutes till.
Yeah.
So we are on our way out the door.
Yes.
Yes, what a great, great 2 days here at the AT&T Morning Line. Yeah. We hope we didn't run any of our audience off.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Don't worry, Chris and Dan will be back starting tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And but it has been
well,
a great,
Jeff, you'll
a
be
great
on tonight. On
I
softball.
Will be. Bath yeah. County, Round County, all things go well. It'll be 2A sectional finals.
Yeah.
And the winner of that game then goes on to the state tournament. We'll have, hopefully have that game about 5:45 pregame
on 97.7. That'd be good. Well, I've enjoyed it, Jeff.
It has been a great day. Special thanks to Townsend Sargum. Danny, listen, everybody down here knows Sargum and a lot of the food.
The foodies all know.
The foodies know. And they know Townsend's is the best. And, of course, Ruth Hunt Candy is absolutely the best of the best, and we appreciate them. Chris and Dan have been in the studio. Thank you very much.
And Hayes for coming down here
setting
on a
our
Sunday
equipment up.
And set all our stuff up.
The AT&T folks and all they do, not only for the Morning Line, but for phone service and connectivity across the state and beyond. Couldn't do it without everybody's help.
Well, it's fun, and I've had a great time, and I really appreciate everyone for listening, and I look forward to seeing a lot of people this weekend in Mount Sterling. We have a big weekend planned, and so thank you again, and happy Derby, everybody. I mean, we still got 2 weeks, but what a way to kick off the celebration.
All the fun stuff that you've heard about. Make plans to travel around and be part of these events and activities and sports teams and things like that right here.
There's
in
some
our
good office. People up here.
Till the next time you hear from us. Yes, Dan.
Yeah, Jeff, don't forget the Loser's Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Tracy's
going to
go down
did.
And do some shopping right now.
I'm going to go on right now.
When we think losers, Dan,
we think
of you.
Hey, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful
thank you very much.
Just to be recognized.
Listen, man. You know we love you,
boy,
and we couldn't do without you.
When you hear that voice, it sounds like it's coming
have,
from above.
We will have that Loser's Cup so that your Derby contest will be complete.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks,
we'll see
Dan.
You. Goodbye.
Bye.
That's it for Morning Line with Jeff and Tracy from the Churchill Downs Derby Museum. Stick around. We have guests live in the studio as we continue with the Good Morning Show coming up right after the CBS News at the top of the hour.
.9 FM at AM 1150 WMST Mount Sterling. CBS News Time. It's 10 o'clock.
CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Clean Origin.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Former President Trump is back in New York for day two of his criminal hush money trial. He spoke to reporters before he entered the courtroom.
Some accountant, I didn't know, marked it down as a legal expense. That's exactly what it was. And you get indicted over that?
The judge has ordered him to attend every court session. CBS's Katrina Kaufman from Lower Manhattan.
He can campaign on Wednesdays, but even that could be in jeopardy later on. The judge was saying that if the trial's taking too long, we might start meeting on Wednesdays. And Trump's attorney was really pushing back on that, saying that Trump is also trying to run a campaign here.
The Supreme Court is meeting this hour to consider a federal obstruction charge that could impact Trump's election interference case, as well as charges against hundreds of January 6th rioters. Former federal prosecutor Lori Levinson.
The defendants are claiming that this statute doesn't apply at all. It only applies in sort of the corporate setting when you're destroying records or documents.
World leaders still wait for word on how Israel's prime minister intends to respond to Iran's first ever direct attack. Correspondent Cammie McCormick.
Netanyahu has met with his war cabinet, and Israeli military chief of staff Herzi Halevi says there will be a response.
We remain at our highest level of readiness. Iran will face the consequences for its actions. We will choose our response accordingly.
There is growing international pressure on Israel not to respond, and Iran says any retaliation will be met with a response from Tehran in a matter of seconds.
So far, no comment from the FAA on claims by American Airlines Pilots Union of a spike in safety and maintenance problems. Spokesman Dennis Tasier.
We're telling our pilots, slow down, take your time, and watch for these potential errors because they're starting to increase across the system.
The International Monetary Fund says the global economy is improving. CBS's Jill Schlesinger.
The IMF now expects growth of 3.2% this year, saying that the world's economy has proven, quote, surprisingly resilient.
A rare Beatles film is coming out of the vault.
Let it be, let it be.
Disney Plus says it will begin streaming the 1970 documentary Let It Be, beginning May 8th.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
It was the last album the Beatles ever released. The Dow is up 193 points. This is CBS News.
Don't pay retail for diamonds. Come to cleanorigin.com, the lab-grown diamond experts. Mention code RADIO10 for 10% off. CleanORIGIN.com, online or one of our retail stores.
Sherry, what have you done to your hair?
What do you mean? Does it not look good?
It doesn't look good. It looks freaking amazing. I can't believe how thick and healthy it looks. Oh, I must know your secret.
No secret. It's hair volume from New Nordic.
Hair volume, huh? Well, it certainly lives up to its name. Your hair has never looked so thick. It is gorgeous.
I was so tired of having thin and brittle hair. Ugh, and the shedding. So I figured I'd give hair volume a try. Needless to say, I'm thrilled with the results. Hey, where are you going?
I'm going to pick up some hair volume right now. My reunion's next month and I want my hair to look as good as yours.
Hair volume is the best-selling hair tablet in the world and one of many award-winning natural health products from New Nordic, the number one supplier of dietary supplements in Scandinavia. Purchase at newnordicusa.com or your local Walgreens, Rite Aid, or CVS. Available as a tablet or delicious gummy. Help your hair look full, voluminous, and beautiful again at newnordicusa.com, Walgreens, Rite Aid, or CVS.
Check out new additions to the Library of Congress National Recording Registry.
There's 1978's breakthrough album by Blondie, Parallel Lines. Notorious B.I.G.'s Ready to Die from 1994. From the same year, Green Day's Dookie.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine?
The Chicks, Smash from 1998. And a Gene Autry holiday classic recorded in 1949.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Steve Kathan, CBS News.
In ancient Olympia, they lit the flame for the 2024 Paris Olympics today. Torchbearers will carry it on an 11-day journey through Greece, then hand it over to organizers. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-230-2777. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-230-2777. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-230-2777. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-230-2777, 800-230-2777, or biglou.com.
Long before Honest Abe Lincoln was on the penny, our agency was protecting Gateway area families and businesses. William Hoffman started the agency that is now Limestone Agency in downtown Mount Sterling in 1847. We invite you to come meet our friendly, knowledgeable staff, and we will be sure your insurance coverage is what you need. See us at 46 Broadway or call 498-3410. Limestone Agency, Hoffman Robertson, celebrating 175 years.
Don't miss the Castle's huge anniversary sale. For 36 years, generation after generation, shopped the Castle and learned you do not have to pay retail for jewelry. If you shop K Jewelers, you'll pay $759 for half-carat lab-grown diamond earrings. At the Castle, same quality, same size lab-grown diamond earrings are just $395. You save over $350. You spend a little time at the Castle, you save a lot of money. Don't pay retail. Shop the Castle in Mount Sterling or thecastlejewelry.com.
Your tax refund gets you more at Furniture World Superstore. Redecorate with your refund. Refurnish with your refund. Furniture World has thousands of items in stock, in style, and on sale. Do more with your tax refund and get the furniture and mattresses you need at the price you want. Plus, interest-free financing for up to 2 full years. Now at Furniture World Superstore. 356 Pinecrest Drive in Moorhead and on Maysville Road, Mount Sterling. Closed Sunday. See store for details.
Looking for a unique way to spend your day? Moorhead, Kentucky is home to 3 art galleries that are sure to amaze you with local artwork full of joy, beauty, whimsy, and enlightenment. Visitors of all ages enjoy an afternoon perusing exhibits at the Kentucky Folk Art Center, the Rowan County Art Center, and the Golden Yang Art Gallery on the campus of Moorhead State University. Learn more about upcoming events and shows at visitmoorhead.com.
Piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me how long you gonna stay here, Joe? Some people say this town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know. Ventura Highway.
And welcome back to Mid-Mornings on Main as we rejoin you. I hope you enjoyed our trip to Louisville that we take every year with Jeff and Tracy down at the Churchill Downs Museum, which is a terrific place. If you get a chance, go and take a visit. I mean, they have a lot of things there. The video surround is tremendous thing to watch. You'll see some things that you'll appreciate. You don't have to be the greatest racing fan in the world to want to go and enjoy what they have at Churchill Downs. We have a guest with us live in the studio now. It's a really good thing. If Tammy McClure had not been with us, I definitely would have played a version of a song called Bald-Headed Men that I like to pull out from time to time. Chief David Charles is with us, and Bobby Stinnett. Guys, what happened? I mean, really, good morning. Glad to have you with us.
Dan, please don't play that song again.
Yeah. Have you heard that one before?
Oh, you've played it for me before.
Please. Oh, I guess.
It's please like, don't do it again.
Kind of like your theme song. Bobby Stinnett, good morning.
Good morning, Dan.
Yeah, thanks for being in. And Tammy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Tammy, have you been with us before ever?
It's been a while. I came with the leadership Montgomery County several years ago.
Very good. So everybody is comfortable in the studio. That's what we like, you know. And we're going to talk about Montgomery County Adapt. One thing, the Adapt moniker does have, I mean, it goes in a lot of different directions. ADAPT is used by different organizations. Montgomery County Adapt, and we want everybody to recognize what we're talking about, and we got a special event coming up, but it's the Montgomery County Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention Team, and we're going to have a special deal coming up on Thursday night at the Health and Civic Center where we're going to talk about Casey's Law. And Bobby, how long has ADAPT, been running?
Oh, goodness. I would say probably 12 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 12 years.
Yeah, and as Casey's Law, has it made much of an effect yet?
Absolutely. It's made an effect over the last several years. As a group, we used to promote Casey's Law a lot pre-COVID, and then obviously when COVID hit, everything got scrambled, and now we're back together doing the same thing. So,
yeah, very good. And Tammy, your position, you are with Shepherd Shelter. Just kind of tell us what you do.
So I'm the compliance officer for Shepherd Shelter, and Shepherd Shelter actually started out as a homeless shelter, and then the pastor kind of saw that the clientele he was serving had substance abuse problems, so he went on a journey to try to find the professionals to come in and help him treat the substance abuse. And then when he became a AODE, alcohol and other drug entity, licensed through the state of Kentucky, I came on to get the accreditations through CARF and ASAM.
Yeah. The last thing in the world that any of us, I can speak for the sheriff and for Bobby, we don't want to be the compliance officer. We don't want to have to do what you do. Yeah. It sounds, oh, well, she works at Shepherd Shelter. She's a compliance officer. And, the things that you have to deal with are, they're so multi-complexual, I'll call that. I don't know if, even know if that's a word, but, and take twists and turns.
Right.
And within the system and within everybody's situation is different.
Right.
Yeah. We don't want to have to do that. Yeah. Bobby'd rather be putting a tattoo on my arm or something else. I know.
You do not want me tattooing you, Dan.
Okay. No.
I don't tattoo.
I know you don't.
You might want to hire Stevie Wonder. He'd probably do a better job.
There you go. Hey. Sheriff, how long is Sheriff now?
This is my fifth year and in my second term.
And how long in law enforcement?
This term will make me 40 years.
40 years. You have seen in the drug problem, it has exploded, and yet it was there a lot and before we really began to recognize it, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. It was like an iceberg. We could see the tip, but we didn't know what was laying under it. And once we started discovering that, and it constantly surfaced more and more, and we started losing so many of our family members, our community members, and we've been all in on it ever since. I worked almost 18 years in a capacity of narcotics in my career, and it is constantly evolving. It is never the same thing. If you're looking to the drug of today, you're missing the one coming tomorrow that's going to smack you in the face, and it's going to have more repercussions and more pain. So we're constantly looking to the future. We have great partners. ADAPT has been great for us as law enforcement, because we have not only gained insights into rehab and the use of narcotics, but we've made friends, I dare say it's family, now that we communicate with constantly, and we try and interview everyone to see what they're doing and what the upcoming trends are. We adopted this policy in 2012 and have been going at it nonstop since. That policy. We used a TKO program to try and go after the high-level drug dealers. And we've been using it since 2002.
This, when you look at what has, how this has evolved, we've made progress, and yet we haven't made progress. Is that safe to say it like that?
It is very safe to say. We can address, as I just stated, today's problems. We'll make progress on those, but if we're not prepared for tomorrow's coming, then we're going to keep constantly going back into the same place we were. We can't let special interest direct the narrative. We have to use a common sense approach and a collaborative approach amongst everyone. It can't be just law enforcement deciding what to do. It can't be just anyone else deciding. We have to come together to make these decisions to see what will benefit our society as a whole.
Tammy, in part you're here because you've got a personal experience. And
correct.
I'm rather than me ask you different questions about it, I want you to share what you want to share about your personal experience that with Casey's Law and with this battle against drugs.
So I've had to deal with substance abuse personally in my home for 35 years. I married a guy that had substance abuse problems, and then about the time we got divorced, our children started having substance abuse problems. I had no idea what to do. I was not equipped. I was raised in a household with law enforcement and professional people that did not. I was sheltered pretty much because I didn't get to see the ugly side of this. And then I started to experience it in my home, and I had no idea what to do. And what Casey Law has done for me is it's given me, as the mom of kids with substance abuse issues, a voice to go into court and say, no more. I have to do for you what you can't do for yourself. And right now, with what's out there, and Sheriff can speak to this, is it, people are dying. It's not just what I was understanding in high school is pot and maybe a little cocaine or something like that. What's out there right now is laced with some deadly substances, and you might think you're getting one thing, you're getting something else, and that's it. I've personally filed Casey Law 3 times, and I can report that all 3 times the kids are alive. And so that gives me hope that at some point there will be a change.
Mm. And I think the biggest apprehension that people would have, this is really complicated. How do I battle through it? Do I have to go get an attorney to try to have this accomplished? You share with us maybe how easy this really is to
So the first 2 times I worked with a advocate. One was out of Powell County, one was out of Winchester. This 3rd time I worked with the advocate, she was in Montgomery County, and basically I went to the county attorney's office. I filed the paperwork. The advocate went to the office, picked the paperwork up, set up all the appointments for me, reserved the bed, and I was in court in 2 days. It was that easy. And then the sheriff's office has moved it along to where they serve the papers very quickly.
And reaction from family members, Tammy, when this happened?
Well, you mean from the person Casey Lawed?
Yeah.
Not happy. They're very upset with you. But my theory on that is you have to be alive to be upset with me, and I can deal with that.
And
because once that fatal overdose happens, it's over.
What about coming out of those days that they spent?
Usually they're grateful after they get some clean time. They're grateful for what happened.
And where did these individuals go for this help?
So one ended up at Hickory Hills in Hazard, and one ended up at Privet Center in Lexington, and one is at ARC in Pikeville.
Yeah. What about visitation that you had with those individuals?
Once they
were placed?
I usually give them about 30, 45 days before I visit.
Hey, there's always a light moment in anything that we did, it seems like. But you do have access to be able to go and visit these individuals. And, wow, that we've only touched the story, but enough. And I think the important thing, Bobby, people need to know, and what they're going to find out if they will come on Thursday night. Really just the process, a lot about the process that people go through this, that you do not have to be an attorney. You do not have to be college educated. You do not have to be high school educated, probably. If you've got somebody in your family that needs help, you can get that for them.
That's the goal of the of the forum on Thursday night is to inform everybody how things work in Montgomery County. Now, obviously, in certain counties, you're going to have different methods, and you may have different challenges. But in Montgomery County, this county has done a really good job of making this as smooth as possible. We just went through with my family as well with an individual. And the whole filing process and getting that individual into a rehab facility and everything was as smooth as possibly can be. And so we want people to really understand that there is hope out there. There is a way of getting someone some help with little to no cost. And like Tammy said, you know, they may be upset the first 30 days or 45 days, but they're going to be alive to be upset.
Yeah.
You know?
Sheriff, we are a society of second chances, aren't we?
Well, as we should be. We're taught forgiveness. And if you take anything from today's commentary, what Tammy said, I had to do what they were unable to do for themselves. And that is powerful. And that is what we need to, the family members need to know, that they don't have to sit and watch their loved ones waste away and die. They can step in and take care of this issue just like they have for their children's entire lives. And this recourse is there for you. You don't have to suffer. And we can give them another chance. Everyone is salvageable. Everyone is savable. You know, so let's try. And if we use that mindset, then our success rate goes way up.
Right. Wonder how many Casey's Law events have been filed in Montgomery County in the last year or in the last couple of years, or do we have any numbers to?
I don't have a number, but I can give you this quote: not nearly enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was the issue that we brought up in our ADAPT meeting, that we really need to focus on Casey's Law. You know, we focus on other things that are good too, like Narcan in the community and making sure people have access to saving someone's life on the spot. But you have to attack the root of the problem, which is addiction in itself. And the only way to attack that problem is to get someone into rehab. You know, and it may take one time, it may take two times, it may take three times, you know, but that life is worth fighting for, you know. And in the end, if it saves a life and they get sober and become productive members of society, I mean, how awesome is that? We actually have a lady come in Thursday night to speak at the Casey's Law Forum who went through a rehab through Casey's Law. And she's 5 years sober, success story so far, and she's wanting to speak about it and share with everybody her story. So it does work.
What drugs are we dealing with right now? And maybe before we even say that, in how many instances, David, I'm going to ask you for just an opinion. We don't have to have any statistics. Probably what percentage of people that get into the drug culture and are in serious jeopardy with their lives and with their livelihood and home life, everything, start out with alcohol abuse?
I don't know as of many now that do. When we first started this issue, it was more prevalent that they started out with alcohol. But I'm not so sure now that alcohol is gatewaying to a lot of these. We have a lot of other issues that are coming in. I can give you this. Approximately 89 to 93% of our crime is related to narcotics in one form or fashion.
Well, I mean, that's...
And that is when they're stealing your converters or using it, that money to purchase narcotics. A lot of our domestics come back to either alcohol or drugs. Our number of DUI-related... or our DUIs that are related to alcohol has plummeted. The number of DUIs related to narcotics has skyrocketed. So you can see that it's gradually replacing a lot of that. Now, I'm not saying there's still not people drinking to excess, or alcoholics. I'm just saying that they're not as prevalent as they were.
What are the major drugs that we're fighting right now?
Methamphetamine and fentanyl, and its derivatives, along with heroin. As everyone knows, there's no poppy fields for making heroin. There's no fentanyl labs for making fentanyl, and we don't have meth labs anymore. To be honest with you, the borders put them all out of business, and it's all coming from the border. You can purchase a kilogram, 2.2 pounds of fentanyl in at the border on this side for $6,500. You can purchase a kilogram of heroin at the border for roughly $15,000. A kilogram of heroin, time you dilute it, cut it, and get it back here, is going to bring you about $360,000 by the time you dilute it enough to when you buy the pure heroin. The fentanyl that you spent $6,500 for is going to bring you about $1.2 million. There is a huge money making operation going on. And those aren't my numbers. Those are the Drug Enforcement Administrative Agency's numbers.
Is the fentanyl, is it a weaker level of fentanyl than what we had heard about initially with fentanyl?
No, it is not. And what people also need to realize is when they get this fentanyl and they're cutting it to try and make it usable, and I keep using the word cutting instead of diluting because it's an old vernacular of mine. When they're diluting it, they're putting it in mixing bowls and mixing it up with mixers, with things such as supplements, things of that nature, so you can use it. And so if they don't mix that properly and there is a heavier concentration in one part of that, in that mixing bowl, and you get part of that, you're dead. It's coming across so much that the prices are going down. Use has gone up and prices are going down. And you know as well as I do, in any market, that drives use up more.
We're pretty much, we're in a world now where we used to think, tell your kids don't take candy from strangers. It's almost like don't take anything from anybody.
Yeah.
And the world we live in, isn't it?
It is. And when we think we're making strides to improve things, we had taken the overdose rate down from a high of 34 in our community